We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in Chicagoland, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I'm comparable. I just a easy disagree right there. I am comparable.
How's your shoulder?
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah. We're doing an SEC East and Sun Belt West preview episode. So you're tuning into the right place. But it's also shoulder talk with Dan and Ty. It's pretty good. I think it's nerve stuff that I might be gripping my tennis racket too tightly. So I need to work on that. Ooh. But I've been doing the Throwers 10. I don't know if you're familiar with
not at all
the Dr. James Andrews encouraged Throwers 10 shoulder loosening and stretching with resistance bands. I'm all in. I can't lose tennis. That's like, I'm old and I need a workout of some kind that gets me excited. So I'm doing everything I can to stay healthy.
You ready for a professional segue, Dan?
Oh my God. So ready.
The only workout I need to get me excited is the SEC East. Boom.
Is the SEC Boom! East a workout?
It was a workout to research all the teams beyond Georgia and Florida. I can tell you that much.
You want to just deep dive Chris Rodriguez for the next hour and a half?
Hey, look, I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready. I'm ready to talk about Chris Rodriguez and the Kentucky rushing attack, Will Levis, Wandale Robinson coming over from Nebraska. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to talk Kentucky football.
All right. Why don't we do some housekeeping before we get into the SEC? What do people need to know about the show and where they can find it and what they should do to engage with it?
You can find us, of course, at solidverbal.com, where we've started posting articles courtesy of our small army of contributors, those being Travis May, Bradley Holhulen, I hope I said his name right, and Connor Miguel. Please go on out to solidverbal.com if you've got any interest at all in reading a little bit more about what our fine contributors have to offer. You can also find all the links that you need at solidverbal.com. If you would like to subscribe to the show and listen along, you can do so, of course, on Apple, on Google, on Spotify, really anywhere you get your podcasts, you can listen to the show. And last but certainly not least, do go on out to verballers.com. We've been doing a ton of stuff out on our Patreon. And for a limited time now, and I've been advised to tell people, truly for a limited time, we have pint glasses and mugs that are available at a certain tier. If you go on out again, verballers.com, you can find out more about that. But there's only a limited quantity available.
I'm holding the mug right now. First of all, it's a robust mug. It's taller than your average mug. And I'm drinking some tea, and it's my go-to. It's the top of my mug rotation. I love it.
Go on out to verballers.com if you've got any interest in that whatsoever. We've also been posting some of the bonus content that we've been doing with respect to the SEC, which we'll talk about here in a little bit with, you know, there being a little bit of news here and there.
Texas, about. Oklahoma, realignment, ESPN, the American Conference. We've now done two almost hour-long streams, one of which with The Athletic's Andy Staples. You can watch the video, or in the case of our most recent one, it's only audio. But the full replay is up on verballers.com. So that's verbal, L-E-R-S.
Correct, yeah. Correct. And follow along on social media. Of course, we post everything out there. There's a newsletter that drops every Friday as well. So we're just starting to crank the machine up, Dan, here as we get closer to the season. As many folks listen to this, the calendar has turned to August, which means approximately 0 months, 0 months until college football starts, just here at the end of the month in a couple weeks. So doing our part here to jump into previews, already done the ACC as well as the Big Ten. Today is SEC, Dan.
And the American, and of course, the MAC. And so today is SEC and Sun Belt part one, and we have SEC and Sun Belt part two. And I'm quite excited. This is going to be your first season without a mysterious day job.
I know.
You're pushing all the chips to the middle of the table.
Pushing them all
for
in.
College football media.
I call.
And if you want to learn about Ty's now former mysterious day job, also a show about that on verballers.com.
That
over an hour.
All right.
So, yeah, all sorts of offerings. Let's do something.
Before we jump into the SEC in terms of previews, we do have to talk about the breaking news that has been just seemingly endless over the last week or so. As you mentioned, we did just do two shows on this, which you can find on the Patreon, but we haven't formally addressed it as part of the public shows that go out to everybody. In case you've been living under a rock, Texas and Oklahoma have announced their intention to leave the Big 12 at the end of the rights deal in 2025 that currently exists with the Big 12. This, of course, has set off a huge shockwave around the world of college football, not the least of which is the highly cynical view that the game has now made an even harder turn towards the money and away from the pageantry and traditions that we all so dearly know and love, not the least of which is what's going to happen to the remaining eight teams in the Big 12, not the least of which is what is ESPN's role in all of this, if any. There are many different facets to explore, but we have to talk about it here. I remain stunned that they kept this under wraps for as long as they did, because as more and more has come out about this pending move now on behalf of Texas and Oklahoma, it's apparent that there were negotiations long in advance of that news first becoming public not so long ago via the Houston Chronicle. How they kept that under wraps is beyond me, because we're just not living in a day and age where things are kept under wraps, especially big things like this in the world of college football. So that's the first takeaway for me. How did they keep this secret? The second is I am very, very curious from the standpoint of what happens to the remaining eight teams in the Big 12. That to me is Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. It's an interesting story in its own right. I feel for the remaining eight teams, and I'm extremely curious to see what happens, because now rumors have surfaced that perhaps the American is going to try and poach some or all of those eight teams. Rumors have been swirling that perhaps the American also has ESPN at the table to assume those other teams and put together some sort of new media rights deal. The landscape in college football is changing, and it's easy to be a cynic, and it's easy to point at the money aspect of it ruling all. I feel like we're past that at this point. If you root for the sport, you just have to turn a blind eye to it. Otherwise, you can't really enjoy it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens next to me is truly what's interesting. I don't know if you have any comment on Texas and Oklahoma specifically, but my eyes are at least trained on what happens to those remaining eight teams and how the follow-on actions from other college football conferences could impact the landscape.
Yeah, nothing I haven't already said on the couple streams we've done, those couple hours worth that are available for replay listening. But I mean, my big picture thing right now is there is an element to this with this kind of movement with the schools and programs of this size that this doesn't feel like a conclusion of something. It very much feels like something in its infancy.
Yeah.
Like this is the very beginning of a full restructuring of the sport. And there's all sorts of, and I definitely agree with the Pac-12 commissioner that it was kind of shady to sort of realign or restructure the college football playoff and expand the college football playoff and have the SEC commissioner actively, secretly speaking with Texas and Oklahoma. And it seems like the timing had to have been such, while also trying to expand the playoff. Like, all of his cards weren't on the table. And look, he's Greg Sankey is there for propping up the SEC and doing what's in the best interest of the SEC. But if he's behaving in a way that turns off other conference commissioners and power brokers, I think there's going to be something grander at play eventually, because they're not just going to let the SEC grow and not have the rest of the sport grow accordingly, conferences, whatever. So I very much feel, was it Lexington and Concord? Were those the first? Are you near either Lexington and Concord?
I am not.
I don't know where, I think they're in Massachusetts. Yeah. So those were the first shots of the Revolutionary War, right?
I believe this is your bit, not mine.
Yeah, no, I hastily looked this up as you were speaking. So it very much feels like we are going to have a sport organized by the Big Ten and SEC.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money and the power lies. And I don't know if it's a, you know, American League, National League situation, but I very much think the sport is going to eventually become structured around those two conferences. And so we're going to get to the point where maybe Fox has the Midwest and West, and ESPN in the way that CBS and Fox lay out the NFL, and ESPN has the ACC, SEC, and, you know, the Big 12 and the American and the Mountain West, and whoever is attractive enough to make it into that final version or next big version of college football. It happens at where it happens. The cards fall as they may, if that's a phrase. That's, I think, the destination we are heading to in the next 5 to 10 years. And so this is just the opening salvo of that, which would make sense that Texas and Oklahoma fall into the SEC Southern and Eastern part of college football. That's where I think ultimately, because this is, look, whatever you believe about ESPN's role in this, and, you know, in every industry, those who cut the check are also involved in the decision making. That's how it works. And so the sport is organizing itself along the lines of TV money. Then there is going to be influence, just like free agency in the NBA is not determined and not influenced by places like Nike.
Right. Sure.
Nike has that say. So I ultimately think that we are going to get to a place where if Disney's controlling ESPN and Disney says this is how we make money and this is how we maximize profit by live events and these schools playing in live football games broadcast on both our over the air, over the top streaming, whatever services, some combination thereof, we're going to maximize. And so then the onus is going to be on everybody else to work with ESPN or Fox or whoever to maximize their own properties. That's where we're heading.
Yeah.
That's where we're heading, because we've talked about this for a couple years now, a few years since the playoff was announced. They're like, college football is a TV show. And I think it'd be wise for everybody to start looking at the sport through that lens, for better or worse, to determine where this is all going.
Well, that's where we're at. And it's gotten there, I think, very quickly. There are many folks that I know listen to this show that have came to that realization.
It's not great. It's a bummer. It doesn't feel cool. But that's where we are.
And it makes sense. I think all of us are adult enough to understand that this is a money grab to some extent. Oklahoma, Texas, I saw, I think it was CBS, maybe it was CNBC. I forget exactly what the source was, but they had estimated that both Texas and Oklahoma could each make an additional $26 million per year. Of course, ESPN just signed that huge deal to put on the Saturday 3:30 prime
300
slot.
Mil for a game.
CBS game. Yeah, $300 million to have that game. That's a lot of money that gets split up that wouldn't otherwise go in the pockets of a Texas or an Oklahoma. So financially speaking, it makes a lot of sense. I get it from that standpoint. And I share your view of it being very interesting to see what the follow-on actions are now. One of the things that Andy brought up when we had our conversation with him is that if you're the Big Ten, if you're the Pac-12, the ACC, there are only a limited number of quote unquote brands out there that will elevate your product further. Notre Dame is, I think, the elephant in the room. Whether Notre Dame wants to do this or not remains to be seen. Eventually, my stance has always been there will come a point in time where they have to abandon the independence thing the way other schools have abandoned rivalries just because the money gets too sweet and they're going to have no choice. When that happens, I don't know, but eventually it will.
Yeah.
Outside of Notre Dame, though, what are the remaining brands out there that are movable? And that would make sense. You know, we've heard some speculation that perhaps the Big Ten would try to merge to some extent with the Pac-12.
Right.
Create a nationwide con. I don't know.
Or have some sort of association. And then there's the conversation right. about where do the leftover 8 teams in the Big 12 go? And, you know, to what degree are they marketable or interesting to existing conferences? And you have, again, the TV elephant in the room with everything.
This is a TV thing. It's absolutely a TV thing. And the question is, what can other conferences do if they are ever so inclined to bolster their own brand? It seems like the American is trying to be the aggressor here. It sounds like the American is interested in adding teams. And I think bully for them. If they can pull it off, bully for them. I don't know what's going to happen next, but we'll see. There will be plenty of time as this story further develops to talk more about it. And we will do that before the season. And as things go along here, if there is breaking
conferences
news.
And pods.
Conferences and pods.
That's my big long-term prediction why Texas and Oklahoma felt the need to make the move when they're making the move to just sort of, I mean, it's secure your place on the spaceship, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to get your tickets. And so that's where Texas and Oklahoma are. They realize that the Big 12 rocket ship has a lot of engines missing and does not have the thrusters needed for a long-term orbit. And so here we are. Everybody's sort of finding their seats on the rocket ships.
Musical chairs.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's musical chairs. I think there are two rocket ships that are going to take off to space. And there are only so many seats. And everybody is sort of figuring out, okay, so we're all heading to this new space station. How do we get there? And who actually gets a seat on the rocket?
Yeah. Two cool rockets and one shaped like the Jeff Bezos dong rocket that nobody wants to be on.
No, that's the new national championship trophy.
Oh, that's
the golden dong rocket. Yeah, yeah. Did you not understand where Amazon is in our place and culture? They're going to own it all. Yeah, that's what's going on. But
right.
Look, let's enjoy the granular. Let's enjoy the actual football. Even though the actual football matters less than it ever has, I think it's the best thing there is. So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. So again, for those of you just tuning in, hello, I'm Ty. He's Dan with the Solid Verbal. We've been previewing all the conferences in college football. We're working our way through. Today, it is the SEC East. Okay.
I love it. I love watching SEC East football.
As do I. The theme of our previews, it's like a car theme this year, Dan.
Yeah, that's true. We're on the road. We're driving.
So we've been looking back at where these teams traveled in 2020. We've been looking at them now as they sit all by their lonesome on the curb, just try to assess the appeal of these programs. We've also been looking at the road ahead, the roadmap as it relates to the schedule, and then trying to do an honest evaluation of what's in the tank. I have haphazardly, through the course of our first 4 preview episodes, put together some sounds that we can use to signify these different bits. You have now picked out some sounds from, is it Baby Driver?
Oh, love Baby Driver, which was shot in Atlanta. Makes sense for
so
this episode.
So what sounds do we have here? What sounds do you want me to play for each of these bits?
Well, we've got the Baby Driver song. We've got the Was He Slow? So Was He Slow is a look back at 2020 for these teams that we're going to discuss within the SEC East and the Sun Belt West.
Okay.
That's a look back.
Here we go.
Was it slow?
No.
Okay. And then we've got Scoot Down the Road, What's My Number? Scoot Down the Road, What's My Number? So that's going to be the traffic.
Good soundtrack for that movie, by the way.
Killer soundtrack and sound design in general. I hope you saw that in the theater if you're listening or you are Ty Hildenbrandt, because the mixing and then the sound quality in that was incredible.
Yeah, it was wild.
All the chase scenes. And then the final clip is introducing himself as a driver.
I'm a driver.
And so I think that's going to be the curb appeal. I don't have anything for the tank.
We can just play Dumb and Dumber.
I can get 70 miles to the gallon on this hog.
I think that one's going to be permanently inducted into the Hall of Fame here. So SEC East. All right.
Yeah. Let's start with the favorites.
We'll start with the favorites. I will say on the whole, I did the Big Ten East as well. And one of my takeaways in looking at the Big Ten East is just how strong all of their schedules were. Now, a lot of that comes from the fact that they play Ohio State. They have to. I did not notice the same level, at least on paper, of strength of schedule in the SEC East. Significantly weaker. South Carolina gets absolutely killed because they play Georgia, they play Florida, they play Clemson. Kentucky also has a pretty good gauntlet of Florida, LSU, and then a road tilt against Georgia on consecutive weeks in early October. But outside of South Carolina, Dan, the strength of schedule range here in the East is from like 55th all the way up to 84th. So it's workable. I'm not trying to dunk on anybody. It's just it's workable and there's room for improvement. We'll talk about which teams have the most room for improvement moving forward. But let's start with Georgia. I've got the Georgia hat on today.
I'm ready.
You know, I like Georgia. Mm-hmm. I've been to Athens. I love it. Georgia went 8-2 last year. Georgia's only losses were to the two teams that played for the SEC title, Bama and Florida. Now, looking back at 2020, the early part of the season was marked by this quarterback question, conundrum, dilemma that we had about Stetson Bennett and whether or not he was a legitimate QB1. I feel like we as a show gradually kind of came down from that pedestal because he looked good, really good at first. You look good at first. Don't get
me. I think we were respectful, but had our doubts pretty early on.
Fair. We did have our doubts. We weren't hook, line, and sinker on the Stetson Bennett train. He looked good, but then he sort of petered out. And I always had an eye on JT Daniels. I'm a huge fan of JT Daniels.
Right.
But
everybody did. Yeah.
He wasn't healthy. He came over from USC. He was still recovering from his injury. He wasn't healthy, and they didn't clear him. It took longer, much longer than I think most expected for them to clear Daniels, but in the interim, they had Stetson Bennett, and he was fine. Georgia was a defense-first kind of team. They were number one in the SP+, so they were very, very good. Yeah. Their rushing attack is largely what got them where they were. It wasn't the most explosive offense in the world, but it was efficient.
Yeah.
So I think that's important context, because there is the Stetson Bennett version of the Georgia offense, and there's the JT Daniels version of the offense the last four games, which was much better.
No Florida, no Alabama on that.
No Florida, no Alabama. Yeah. Georgia was 4-2 before, averaging 29 points per game. They were 4-0 once JT Daniels finally took over, and they averaged somewhere around 37 points per game. So it was a different offense once he finally got this thing cranking. And I think that's part of the appeal as we move forward now into 2021, excuse me. Like, I know we've said this time and again, but one of the most interesting elements just from a national level is that there are a number of teams that are trotting new quarterbacks out there. Georgia isn't, Oklahoma isn't, but most of the other big guns are. And that's going to be a story to watch. So, you know, just speaking personally, I love putting this preview together because it was very simple.
Sure.
It was simple. Not a lot of mystery here. There's no trap doors. We know exactly what Georgia is. And so that made this easy. I think so. Georgia's the odds-on favorite to win the SEC East, certainly for the conference, as well as the playoff and potentially a national championship. They're going to be a favorite in most of their games, probably not against Clemson in week one. But they're going to be fun. They're going to be a fun TV show.
Is there a line out for that game, by the way?
I haven't seen it yet.
All right. I'm looking it up as you speak. Continue.
I think the appeal here is that this could finally be the year for Georgia because Alabama's turning over its quarterback position. You know, you've got all these other contenders around college football that have some questions now going into the season. There's more turnover at some of those bigger schools than there seems to be elsewhere.
Okay.
So I'm very optimistic on this potentially being the year for Georgia. And especially so because of how good JT Daniels looked down the stretch. Now he's got to stay healthy, right? And you know, he's got good support around him. Seven other starters return on that Georgia offense, including Zamir White, who was very good on the ground, had a bunch of touchdowns. The running back core is deep. It sucks George Pickens got hurt. And so I have questions out wide about
that's
what that's going
to
look like.
For you. When you say we know what Georgia is going to look like, that's the question to me. If there was an element to the 2020 squad, and granted, the Stetson Bennett squad was not the JT Daniels squad. It's not just what JT Daniels looks like, but it's who is JT Daniels throwing to? What do the game changers out wide look like? Especially even if George Pickens plays, obviously he's going to be playing on a rehabilitated knee. It's Jermaine Burton. It's what Caris Jackson, like who is that guy that is like, okay, here is the suddenly gravitational player next to Pickens or in lieu of Pickens, whatever. What does that is the element to Georgia that we haven't fully consistently seen against the best teams in
the
SEC.
No, it's 100% true. And again, it sucks that Pickens got hurt again.
Yeah, for sure. Unbelievable talent.
I feel pretty confident that Georgia has the pieces and that somebody can step up and can be that number one threat in lieu of Pickens. But
yeah,
that is the real question about the offense, because the running back core is very deep. I like JT Daniels, provided he can stay healthy. The line is loaded with talent. They're still going to have to tweak that combination a little bit. I think Matt Luke, the former Ole Miss coach, a very good offensive line coach.
Yeah.
He's still kind of playing with that formula to figure out what it looks like up front, but it should be very good. Again, it's really a question of health for JT Daniels. And I think what kind of weapons he has out wide, certainly not in the running game. They're going to be fine there.
Yeah.
Defensively, where Georgia really made its hay last year, they're loaded.
Yeah,
they're loaded.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah.
You know, again, to the point of this not being much of a mystery, they're loaded. Best defensive line in the SEC. No questions asked for me. Led by Jordan Davis. He could have gone pro. Kind of surprised people deciding to come back.
There's some good lines in the SEC coming back this year. But yeah, it's hard to make an argument against it.
Georgia's the best. Might have the second best linebacking core behind Alabama, led by N'Kobe Dean. Love N'Kobe Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary is still very good, but it is a question mark of the defense. They got to congeal here and figure it out very quickly going up against DJ Uiagalelei,
yeah,
who can throw the ball vertically in week one.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if they can hang with Clemson, if they can beat Clemson, I think Georgia's home free. There's just not a lot of offense. There's not a lot of offense that scares me on this schedule. And even Florida's got a lot of turnover. We'll talk about them next if you want. Florida's got a lot of turnover. There are big questions about what that offense is going to look like. I don't know. Outside of that Clemson game, there's not a lot here that scares me. And I think Vegas agrees because the over-under is 10.5.
When's the Florida game?
The Florida game is on Halloween weekend.
Okay. So if Emory Jones and whatever the Florida offense is going to succeed this year, it will be operating by then, if it is successful, because they're obviously, you know, Kadarius Toney, Kyle Pitts, Trevon Grimes, a lot of new pieces on that offense just in terms of pieces. But that is, you know, that is time for Florida
time
to figure things out.
Yeah. There's time, but this, I would say just on the whole, this, and I jotted this down, the schedule gives me serious Clemson vibes, that it's not just because Clemson's on the schedule. It's just that there's really like one big game.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's very manageable. They get Arkansas and a road tilt against Auburn from the West. Do any of those scare you? They don't scare me. The only other landmine is that Florida game. And given Florida's turnover, maybe they'll have it cranked up by then. But Florida's got more questions than just offense. Defense wasn't particularly great a year ago either. So I don't know. Georgia's the team that I feel most confident in on that side of the SEC.
Well, there's also another question, by the way. Anytime you start JT Daniels, it's who's behind JT Daniels? Because
that's an issue. That is an issue.
The dude got hurt early on but he has had injury issues. So what is it? Is it Carson Beck? Is it Brock Vandegrift? Like, who is expected, if called upon, to come in? I don't, we haven't had fall camp yet, so who knows? But like, That's a big thing to watch out for. And then, you know, Vandegrift, I believe, was their 5-star. And so,
and Stetson Bennett is still there.
Stetson Bennett is still there.
You know, he was fine last year.
A serviceable backup. But
let me put a very fine point on this.
Yeah.
If you think Georgia will go 0-2 against both Clemson and Florida, then you take the under 10.5.
Right.
If you think they'll go 1-1 or better, then you take the over. That's what's in the tank. I'm playing it.
I can get 70 miles to the gallon on this hog.
I personally fall in the ladder. I don't know how they'll do against Clemson. I think they're good enough to beat Clemson.
Sure.
So I would go over 10.5, which is a high number. But I feel that strongly about this Georgia team. I think they win the East. I think they're a real contender here. how they square up against Bama, you know, we can talk about that on the next show, but I really feel pretty strongly about Georgia's chances this year. This could be the year for Kirby Smart.
They should. I would take the over. I am right now, without having studied Florida too extensively, I'm somewhat bearish on the Gators this year, just in terms of it being sort of an in-between year, a gap year. There's no crazy back-to-backs. After Clemson, it's UAB, South Carolina, Vandy, Arkansas, at Auburn, Kentucky. Like, I'm just not terribly worried about year one of Brian Harsin. Kentucky's challenging, but that's in Athens. If it were at Mizzou after the Florida game, that sort of makes me tip my head a little bit. Mm-hmm. But no, it's in Samford. So like, I'm not terribly worried. I have them at 11-1 at the very worst. Especially since they were able to weather things and move on to JT Daniels in the weirdness that was 2020. So like the stability and full regular offseason and health, et cetera, of JT Daniels, I think is a big deal.
Yeah. Okay. So we agree then. We agree.
Over. Yeah.
Speaking of Florida, let's talk about Florida.
Let's.
You say you're bearish on Florida.
A little bit.
Yeah. I think I share that point of view. Florida went 8-4 a year ago. They were about 12 points away from an undefeated regular season. They lost by 3 at A&M because they had the Malik Davis turnover, which contributed. They had the stupid penalty against LSU with the Marco Wilson in the shoe thing, which
It was also very foggy. It was just a weird game. That was a strange moment. Yeah,
the shoe was a cherry on top.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of penalties down the stretch against Bama. They only lost that one by 6. A bit of a shootout.
Slow start. Yeah.
So they went to the bowl game. They were depleted. They had a bunch of guys opt out. They got drilled by Oklahoma. I take so much of that with a grain of salt, but it was super impressive the talent that they had on the same field, because Kyle Trask got drafted. Obviously, Kadarius Toney and Kyle Pitts both went in the first round. Trevon Grimes, you know, trying to make his way into the league as well. So they had a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball, and they were fun to watch. The job that Dan Mullen did with Kyle Trask was just remarkable over the span of a couple of years. I mean, he turned Kyle Trask into an NFL talent. So here we are now, and all those guys left. All those guys left. In total, not just from the offense, but in total, there were 8 guys from last year's team that got drafted. That's a huge blow to any team. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Alabama. I don't care if you're Georgia. I don't care if you're Ohio State. Losing 8 guys to the league's a problem.
Sure.
That's a problem. And I think layered on top of that is the fact that defensively, even with that talent, they still gave up 428 yards per game, over 30 points per game. It's their worst output, Dan, since the Woodrow Wilson administration, if you can believe that. 1917, I looked it up.
Wow. Not great.
So, it's kind of like good news, bad news for Florida. Looking forward, the good news is that they had a good season last year and they were very close. They had their moments, a little bit of lumpiness here and there.
And they closed the gap against Georgia, which I guess Georgia fans got tired of hearing. And then Florida actually closed the gap. Yeah,
correct. Correct. Good news is that they had a really good season. Dan Mullen was able to assemble the pieces, was able to get that offense cranking, and they were fun to watch. The bad news now is part of the, I guess, appeal, part of the question as we move forward into 2021. Florida has the fewest number of returning starters in the SEC. So what's the appeal? The appeal is new faces. And I'm damn curious to know what the offense is going to look like. Dan Mullen's system, we know, is adaptable. That's part of his appeal as a coach. But there are just different types of players out there now. Emory Jones, who is presumed to be the starter, is a high-profile recruit. You'll recall that was a big deal when Dan Mullen...
And he's had time on the field and packages, yeah.
He's been waiting his turn. He didn't transfer out. He's been waiting his turn behind Kyle Trask. But Kyle Trask and Emory Jones are totally different dudes. They just play different kinds of football. They're just different players altogether. And so what can Dan Mullen do with Emory Jones? I recall at the time that he flipped from, I think, Ohio State, if memory serves.
Okay.
That one of the talking points was, this is a Mullen guy. This is Emory Jones is a Mullen guy. He's a Mullen quarterback. What does that mean? I don't know. We haven't seen him much. See him a little bit.
mobile can run strong. You know, there's been a lot of sort of sturdy Dan Mullen quarterbacks in his system. I think we all remember Chris Relf.
Of course.
And then, I guess, Tebow and Dak Prescott. So the good news about Emory Jones is I think the offensive line should be okay, and Jacob Copeland, Xavier Henderson, I believe, should be their best two receivers, and they're pretty promising, and I think they get DeMarcus Bowman, right? The Clemson transfer at running back. So there's enough there. There'll be enough guys rotating at running back that to command attention away from Emory Jones and sort of open things up if the offense is built around Emory Jones properly and Jones holds up his end of the bargain. So the cupboard isn't bare. It's not bare. It's just under experience.
It's just not been opened very much. Yeah.
And correct.
The bigger question on Emory Jones is, first off, we don't know how that's going to go, what the offense is going to look like with him and not him as a change of pace quarterback.
Right.
More broadly, we don't know if it's going to be him at the end of the year. Because
there's a Kitna and a Del Rio waiting in the wings.
And Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
So there are talented guys behind him that could potentially make a push. The offense is going to look different. They're going to need help from the line. You're high on the line, but
I think they're okay. They're okay. Still kind of green.
They lose their two best blockers from a year ago. And so it's going to take a little bit for that to form up. But the appeal for me is the offense and what does it look like now after Kyle Trask, after Kadarius Toney, after Kyle Pitts.
Maybe how do you obvious. Not give a benefit of the doubt to Dan Mullen? Yeah, you're right.
Defensively, I don't know. I have a really hard time overlooking Florida from a defensive standpoint because there's always just so much talent. But they are really inexperienced up front and in the back. They're good at linebacker, but on the leading edge and on the back edge, there is an experienced question. If they could coach him up, they'll be fine.
Right.
But I don't know if we know enough at this point to just commit to that. And I'm not going to. So I have real questions about both offense and defense.
But other than that.
Yeah, other than that, right, they're great.
They have a couple of like legit dudes on the defense, but it's not legit dude units. And I'm uncomfortable saying dude units right now as I say it out
loud. It's true.
But
it's
like,
true.
Kaiir Elam's really good. But like, what does the rest of the secondary look like? I know they have a linebacker, I forget his name, that should be really good once again. But what does the rest of the core look like?
Yeah, exactly.
It's individuals right now that we're confident in, not the full landscape.
And so the thing for Florida is you talk about all of those factors and then you look at the schedule. They draw both Bama and LSU. LSU on the road from the West, which is not easy. LSU is going to be better. The schedule is spaced out pretty well. But they also play Florida State to close out the season. No one's super high on Florida State, but who knows with Mackenzie Milton what that game ends up looking like towards the latter half of the year. They've got a potential trap game against Mizzou the week before the Florida State game. And I think if you are looking at this in terms of the over-under, you're seeing Vegas has them at 9. I would not want to take that bet.
Okay.
I would now want to take that bet because then there's also Georgia, the cocktail party, which we talked about earlier. So folks are taking the over here, and I don't get it. I would not want it. I think Bama and Georgia are going to be two losses right away. I feel like LSU's a loss, too. It's a road game.
Okay, so if you have Bama, Georgia, LSU, there's your 9.
Yeah.
If those are 3 losses, what is the likeliest fourth loss on this schedule? I don't know. I don't see that fourth loss. I might just completely stay away. I guess it's at Kentucky. Maybe?
But here's my point.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And I don't know if the fourth loss is obvious. But A, with so much turnover, to even have a chance at hitting the over, you have to assume no slip-ups, which is a lot in an SEC schedule. And secondly, if we feel pretty confident about the fact that Bama, Georgia, and LSU are all going to be losses, that still only gets you to 9. Why are you betting the over? If the best you could do is a draw, a push, why betting the over at all? Don't take that bet. Do not take that bet.
The reason you bet the over is...
because you're a Florida fan or an alum. I don't know. But don't take that over. It's a dumb bet.
The reason you take the over is they did just beat Georgia. They had a really good shot at beating LSU, and they play both of those teams again. And
don't take that bet. Don't take the bet.
Dan Mullen full off season with Emory Jones. Okay,
don't take the bet.
Even if they go over, it's a really tough trigger to pull right now in August.
Don't take that bet. I get you. Okay. Don't take that bet. So I am very curious about Florida. I'm very interested in the Florida Gators.
Should be a great watch, mostly because they're going to give. I think they're going to give some points back on defense.
It's going to be a lot of shootouts is what it's going to be, but it will be a fun TV show, much like Georgia. I think Georgia will be a good TV show. If we're talking about steering into college football as a TV product, Georgia and Florida are going to be fun as hell. That game between the two is going to be fun as hell on Halloween weekend. Mm-hmm. Cocktail party.
Yeah. Depending on who's healthy at receiver, matched up with Kyrie Elam, should be great.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Where do you want to go next?
I guess we opened with a reference to Chris Rodriguez. Let's go Kentucky.
Kentucky, huh?
Yeah.
5-6 a year ago. A really tough year for the Wildcats. And this
is an odd year, but most Kentucky years are odd.
Most Kentucky years are odd, but you know, we talk about the 2020 COVID year a lot. We did a whole mini series on that, which some of you even listened to.
Correct.
And it the way that this affected schools was very nuanced and very difficult for so many of these guys to compute, to comprehend, to move on from. Kentucky in particular had a rough time of it because COVID wiped out their entire spring after 5 practices. In May, they had Chris Oates, a promising linebacker, suffer a stroke, nearly killed him.
Oh.
They had their longtime offensive line coach, John Schlarman, pass away after an extended battle with cancer in mid-November. And then after that, they had to try and play and they got hammered. Like they got killed. They lost by 60 to Alabama a couple, 9 days after the death of Coach Schlarman. And then a week after that, they had to play against Florida. They lost handily to Florida, but they were down even more players and coaches. So it's just like it kind of came off the swivel. And to that extent, I have a really hard time really taking it too seriously. Kentucky had to go through a lot last season, full stop, just to get this thing going. In terms of the on-field product, once they were on the field, they had the running game figured out on both sides of the ball. Passing, different story. We won't talk so much about what they did from the passing department. Yeah. They weren't good at throwing it. They weren't good at stopping other teams from throwing it. Just wasn't their thing last year. Terry Wilson was back. He's a fun guy to root for. I think we all liked Terry Wilson a great deal. Just wasn't a great passer. Wasn't a great passer. And I was looking at my air yard statistics. You know, I'm into that. Your leading receiver had 4.6 air yards per target, which is really low. Even if you're a possession guy, even if you're coming out of the backfield, that's a really low number.
Yeah.
And so I credit Mark Stoops for looking at that and saying, we got to figure something out here. We got to figure out a way to get more creative, generate more explosion plays. If we can do that and keep the running attack where it was, now we're talking. Now we're talking more balance on offense because the defense is steady. The defense had quality players at all three levels. They do lose a bunch, two really at each level of the defense going into 21. So it'll be interesting to see how they fill the gaps. We can, you know, talk about that here momentarily. But I think just a tough year for Kentucky across the board. And if nothing more, I think Mark Stoops had an epiphany that he needed to change things up and hopefully modernize the offense in a way that it hadn't been previously.
So I think Liam Cohn comes in with a really interesting, strong reputation as being a smart offensive dude who's now running that offense.
He does. Yes, he does.
But
there's a lack of experience there.
Well, it's not just a lack of experience. It's like, hey, the quarterback is going to be a bigger, stronger dude who has questions about his ability to throw the ball consistently. Which one am I talking about, Ty?
Yeah, exactly.
Am I talking about Will Levis or am I talking about Joey Gatewood? Yeah.
I think we're talking about Will Levis. I think Will Levis is the presumed starter. So they're installing a new offense. They're making the switch. They get Liam Cohen over. He's a 35-year-old former assistant for Sean McVay with the LA Rams. What Mark Stoops is trying to do is particularly revamp the quarterback and wide receiver position. They just have not gotten enough from those position groups in terms of the passing attack. So first things first, they went out and they bring over Will Levis, Will the Thrill, Levis, if you will.
Words have meaning, Ty.
From Penn State. Will was thrilling when they brought him in last year in spots. It was more of their change of pace quarterback.
Did he change the pace?
He's a tank running the football. He's a big kid and he runs hard. I just, as a passer, if we're talking about revamping and going more vertical and improving upon 4.5 air yards per target, Will Levis is not the first name that comes to mind. I hope
His
to be wrong.
QBR
about that.
Against man coverage was 16. Okay, continue.
James Franklin used him primarily as a runner last year. Now, even still, is he better than Terry Wilson as a thrower? I hope. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. If you are a Kentucky fan, your hope is that he's better in that department for sure. But you do need to temper your expectations here because I've seen a lot of Will Levis. Do not expect him to come in there and start dropping dimes. His game is not as a precision passer. He's a bull who can run, and because of that running threat, can catch you off guard with the pass. That's been my evaluation of him. That doesn't mean it's not an upgrade, but that's what you get with Will Levis. You couple that with what they did at the receiving position, which I have no questions about, bringing over Wandale Robinson from Nebraska.
It's great.
Wandale Robinson is from the state of Kentucky. While he was at Nebraska, they used him a bunch of different ways because of his versatility. Liam Cohen's on the record saying he wants to use him as more of a pure slot receiver. Doesn't want him to be a gadget guy. He wants to use
him. And they
as
have
a slot
the running backs. It's not like they need that production at running back with Chris Rodriguez and Smoke is back, right?
Kavassier Smoke. Great name. So I think Wandale can have a huge impact here. And I'm excited to see how they use him and if he can link up with Levis or Gay or whoever the quarterback is.
Yeah.
The running back contingent's very strong with Christopher Rodriguez, with Kavassier Smoke, even despite the fact that Asim Rose is gone. If Cohen could figure out a way to establish balance here, this could be a pretty good offense. They have the pieces in place. I'm excited about that, but I am not going to jump the gun here. There are a lot of factors that you just have to wait and see.
Man, you're such a politically astute person for not just saying Kentucky can't throw the ball. And I don't know that they have a quarterback who can throw the ball. And it's a bummer because Wandale Robinson is really good at catching and running with the ball.
Yeah,
that's a really simple way of putting things.
I have a bad tendency to insert too many words.
Yeah. No, it's just
I'm
worried about your calves for dancing around that reality as vigorously as you have been.
They had trouble throwing the ball. That does not mean they won't improve this season.
Okay.
And that's what I am hopeful for. I am hopeful that Liam Cohen can put this together. It was seen as kind of a brazen move to go out and get this guy. And in some of the preview content that I read, they raved about the interview. He came in with a very clear vision for what he thought the offense could be.
And
that was impressive to Mark Stoops. Now, can he put that into motion? I don't know. I don't know if Will Levis is going to be an effective trigger man for that, but we'll see.
You haven't watched enough of him at Penn State, all due respect?
I kind of have.
You watch Will Levis, and look, I don't know Will Levis. I have nothing against Will Levis. I hope he succeeds, and I hope I'm. I love. We should just do a show about like we hope we're wrong, but I didn't really watch the Penn State offense with him in and say, man, some team is getting that arm. Holy hell, are they lucky?
Yeah, I mean, he was seen in spots last year as an upgrade over Sean Clifford. That's not always a compliment because Sean Clifford had some pretty dark times last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Will Levis thing, I'm not as bullish perhaps as the Kentucky staff because I saw a lot of Will Levis, but maybe they will put him in a position to succeed. And it, just real quick to close the loop, defensively, they do have some holes to plug. I mentioned they lose two big timers pretty much at all three levels of the defense. They did bring over Jaquez Jones from Ole Miss, who was Ole Miss's leading tackler. He can bolster that linebacking core. The theme of the defense, though, is that they've got basically two big guns at all three levels that they need to try and plug gaps with. And
great.
You know, the recruiting's been very strong in general, mm-hmm. I'd say.
Oh, Stoops has been super impressive on the trail. Yeah.
It's been really strong. I have questions about the defensive line, though. You know, can he assemble the parts in a way that doesn't give too much against an SEC that the SEC, at least that side of the SEC, is not going to be predicated on the pass. These are going to be teams that want to run. So,
by the way, I pulled up Kentucky's schedule not to get ahead. What are your thoughts there? Oh,
yeah.
LSU, that's in October, right?
LSU and Mississippi. I said it at the top. They've got Florida, yeah. They've got LSU, and they've got a road tilt against Georgia in three straight weeks in early.
Yeah, and a bye before October. Mississippi State, which is also there. Yeah.
And then they close out against Louisville. Who knows what we get from Louisville this year? So it's not the easiest slate. I think I can find six wins on here without trying too hard. The over-under is currently at 7. Most people are crushing the over. I would not want to be one of those people because...
Oh, I would take the under. I would happily take
just,
the under
here. There are too many unknowns with the new offense and, you know, transfers coming over. Like, even if it works, these things take time. 7's a lot for me. 7's a lot. 6 I'm okay with, but 7 we're starting to like feel uncomfortable about things. So yeah. I hope it works. I hope it works because a Kentucky offense that is a little bit more astute in the passing game makes things very interesting in sure. the SEC East, especially okay. against teams like Florida. Like, let's be real about it. Yeah. If Kentucky can put a defense together and if they can somehow stretch the field, like, Florida's defense is gettable.
Ty Hildenbrandt with a 38-inch vertical makes him a super intriguing dunker, but he doesn't have it.
Moving on. Where do we want to go next?
Let's go to a team with a new coach. Let's go to Tennessee, because we can also talk South Carolina and Vandy with that. But, like, let's go to Tennessee, and let's talk about the positives to be taken. Let's look at Tennessee optimistically, not in terms of how many games they can realistically win, but like, okay, here are some good things because the unfortunate things have mounted up for the Vols.
I won't harp on the unfortunate things, but just for context, 3-7 a year ago, they wanted to go to a bowl. Their team got wiped out with COVID. They ended up firing Jeremy Pruitt because of an internal investigation.
Yeah.
Phil Fulmer ended up stepping aside in the wake of all that.
Yeah.
So it did not end well. They weren't very good. You could blame the quarterback. You could all sorts of things. They were terrible against the pass on defense. There were a lot of reasons why it was bad at Tennessee, but it was bad. And they are starting over again. That's the appeal. The appeal is that they're starting over with Josh Heupel from UCF because Fulmer stepped aside. They needed a new AD.
Yeah. Well, Fulmer was only there like 3 years, I think.
He was only there 3 years. But he'd been at Tennessee forever in some capacity.
Long-time Vol in some capacity, yeah.
Danny White, the new AD, comes over from UCF. His first move was to hire the football coach from UCF and Josh Heupel.
Right.
Here is why, if you're a Tennessee fan, you should be excited about this.
I'm ready.
I don't know what the results in the field are going to be. I have no idea. But
it's good enough for me.
But... This is going to be a much, much different offense than you saw a year ago. It's a much different offense. Heupel runs the NASCAR offense. It's up-tempo. It's no huddle. It's quick. It's an offense that doesn't bring back much in the way of starting talent. That may be a good thing.
Yeah.
And so it's an offense that is certainly going to put receivers more in focus. It's an offense that should generate some thousand-yard guys. We'll see. But I think as a, at least a starting point and from the offensive standpoint, it's just going to be different. It's just going to be different. I like the fact that if you're a Tennessee fan, you have something completely new, a blank slate that you can at least get excited about. That being said, it's been a blank slate at Tennessee a couple times over the last decade now.
Yeah. Who's starting at quarterback for this blank slate?
I think it's going to be Hendon Hooker.
Okay. Over Joe Milton and whoever else, Harrison Bailey. Yeah.
I would pick Hendon Hooker out of all those guys. Supposedly it's close.
Okay.
I find that hard to believe personally. I don't think Joe Milton's very
close,
good.
Close between Hooker and Joe Milton?
I don't think Joe Milton's that good. He missed a lot of throws for Michigan last year.
Sure.
So I would go Hendon Hooker, but you're right. Harrison Bailey is still there, who came in as a highly touted recruit.
He's a top-flight recruit, yeah.
Brian Maurer is still in there. He's played some as well. We'll see what that ends up being. I do like Jalen Hyatt a lot out wide. I think he stands to benefit from this system a great deal, provided they can get that quarterback position set.
Yeah, you could see some of the clips in the spring. Granted, it's the spring, but they were really bombing it downfield.
They were bombing
it
downfield.
There seems to be, some sort of concerted effort at an offensive identity around explosive pass plays, which I think is super smart.
Absolutely.
So that's good.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I like that. I think that's smart. I'm curious to see, again, how this team is able to function with a new offense, and given the fact that a lot of guys transferred out.
Yeah.
They had some guys transfer in, but as we move over to the defensive side of the ball, they lose Henry To'o, who goes over to Alabama, the linebacker. Mm-hmm. They lose Kavarius Crouch, who goes up to Michigan. We talked about him on the Big Ten East show that we did. Like, those are two big losses. And with a new defensive coordinator coming over from Penn State, Tim Banks, you'll be surprised to hear he wants to be more aggressive, Dan. They all want to be more aggressive.
Hold on, I want to hear your full recap of the Kevin Steele era at Tennessee for like the 3.5 weeks he was brought in as an undetermined defensive coach and advisor. Yeah, that's where I'm looking for here.
I think depth will be a concern on defense. And how Tim Banks works with that, how Tim Banks works at all, frankly, is going to be a question. People like Tim Banks. He's a good recruiter. There's just not a lot to go on, though, on what his defense is going to look like. And so I don't really have an honest assessment that I can give there, because I don't know what that's going to look like. He was an assistant at Penn State for a number of years.
Look, they're going deep. They're hopeful that the quarterback is good at going deep and doesn't get hurt behind what I assume is a patchwork line. Though they have, like, it's 40% Mays, right? It's Cade Mays next to his brother, the Georgia transfer. Yep. So hopefully they work out well. And, you know, they're going to hope to surprise somebody 49-42.
I think that's right. The offense is new. It'll be more up-tempo. The defense, I think, is thin. They've got some talent, of course, at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
But it is thin. And, you know, it's either you take that optimistic view of it, or you get super pessimistic about the fact that they had 20 players leave the program and transfer out, including To'o, Crouch, Eric Gray, Ty Chandler, Jameer Johnson along the line, Garantano, who I don't know if any of us are that excited about getting Garantano on our team. Maybe Wazoo is. JT Shroud also left the program. So it's like, anytime you got the new coach, you have a lot of turnover. You could certainly take a pessimistic view of things. I will choose to not do that. I will choose to say instead, if you're a Tennessee fan, the new up-tempo offense should be fun to watch.
They might give up 100 points to the Florida-Mizzou 1-2.
Florida-Mizzou 1-2. They get Ole Miss and Bama from the West. Back-to-back weeks.
They might give up 100 to those two teams as well.
They get them on back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
They play Pitt in week two, which is a weird, like, non-conference game that I'm actually kind of excited to see. I think it'll be an early bellwether for Tennessee. They go to Florida, their home against Georgia. I'll give them 5 wins. I'll give them 5 wins. That may be generous, but 5-6 wins, maybe they could push for a bowl.
Haven't there been, I feel like there have been at least 2 quarterbacks who have transferred from Tennessee to Pitt. Nate Peterman transfer from Tennessee to Pitt. There is that weird, I'm forgetting the other, I actually met the other guy's dad at the Elite 11 in like 2012. Chad Wojtek, Ty. Who also?
Wow.
Tennessee, yeah. So there is that connection between Tennessee and Pitt. There is that connection. Pitt might score 35 against Tennessee, which is crazy.
The Taylor Swift invisible string.
Pennsylvania, Tennessee. Okay, I like it.
Where shall we go next?
Let's go to South Carolina.
New coach.
New coach. New everything.
I'm not going to harp on the bad stuff. I won't harp on the bad stuff. They went 2-8 and Will Muschamp got fired. They were led by Kevin Harris, who ran for over 1,100 yards and 11 touchdowns. Shane Beamer is your new coach at South Carolina. He is a familiar name to South Carolina. He did coach under Steve Spurrier. Of course, you know him mostly because of his dad, Frank Beamer, whom he also did coach under for a brief period of time as a running backs coach. He has a lot of coaching experience. It's just not as a head coach. And that's part of the intrigue here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of the intrigue. Can he assemble the pieces around him? Can he put together a staff? I don't know. I don't know. He's a high energy guy. He's a special teams guy.
Well, I mean, he hired Mike Bobo and lost Mike Bobo. Depending on how you feel about the behind the scenes machinations.
Yeah.
That was a quick, weird couple weeks.
It was weird. But he was most recently at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley. He's coached under some really good coaches. Can he come over and replicate that? I don't know. Now, Luke Doty is going to be the starting quarterback. They're really high on him. If this offense improves, it's going to be not because of Doty. It's because they get production at quarterback and they're able to hand it off to Kevin Harris or Marshawn Lloyd, their freshman running back that they're very excited about. The line has four guys back. I think we're going to see a lot of work for the running game this year. That's where this is going. In the short term, doesn't mean there won't be creativity. Doty's a very athletic guy. He's a converted wideout. But I think that is going to be the real bedrock of this offense if it's going to come together, handing the ball off to either Harris or Lloyd.
Okay.
Defensively, a lot of talent. Zach Pickens, Jordan Birch. Outside of that, they lose Ernest Jones. They lose Jamie Robinson. Went to
and this
Florida
was not
State.
A good defense last year, to be clear.
A good defense, and that's sort of the catch, right? And that's kind of why, if you sense hesitation, they lose some great talent from that defense that was really bad. J.C. Horn was a high draft pick.
Of course. Both of the secondary itself was really nice, yeah.
But the defense stunk, and that's part of, like, the confusion, and certainly part of why I think Muschamp got let go. So, you know, I don't think talent is the problem. I think assembling the pieces, establishing the culture, and, you know, figuring out how to do it as a first-time head coach is really the pure intrigue for me from a South Carolina standpoint. The schedule's brutal. There's no wiggle room for Shane Beamer in year one. It's just brutal. It's the 22nd hardest schedule in college football. They draw A&M and Auburn from the West. They got to go to Georgia in week three. They're home against Florida to start November. They close out the year, listen to this, in November. Florida, at Mizzou, Auburn, and Clemson. That is not an easy stretch if you're Shane Beamer, if you're trying to build something new at South Carolina. So I think my overall takeaway here is that Beamer Ball 2.0, Beamer Ball 2021, however we're categorizing this, it is going to be largely on the shoulders of Kevin Harris and Marshawn Lloyd. Largely behind a line that is very experienced and brings back four guys. The defensive line has talent. We'll see how it materializes. And everything else, the little guy that you can draw, that I did draw in our latest newsletter, like the ASCII guy shrugging, like, don't know. We'll see. That's how I feel about South Carolina.
I think if there's buy-in, they can get to 6-6 in a bowl game. I think if there's legit buy-in and everybody's on the same page and both the new coordinators resonate with their players and install a scheme that makes sense and that sort of works out and that there's a clear cohesive plan and identity, I think they can go to a bowl game. And it's, you know, Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, you know, we have Kentucky in transition at quarterback, Troy, who's pretty good, but still a Sun Belt team, Tennessee in deep transition, and Auburn in transition. So there are teams to be had, and they have Auburn at home and beat Auburn last year that can be had. But I really think with all those moving pieces, it needs to really come together and come together quickly.
3.5 is the Vegas over under. So
I might take it.
Man, I don't know.
3.5? Are you sure?
Yeah.
South Carolina is looked at as like an either 3-9 or 4-8 team.
3.5.
Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, toss up Kentucky to me because that's at home. Troy is tricky. That's 4. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, maybe grab Auburn. That's 7.
Most people are taking the over for what it's worth.
I would take that over. That number almost seems wrong, but I trust you.
3.5. No, I'm just looking at it. Okay. 3.5.
All right.
Tough schedule, though.
It's tough. It's for sure tough. But, you know, there's a big if there. I'm more optimistic about South Carolina than Tennessee at this moment.
Who's left? Vandy?
Vandy.
Hmm.
Let's be Vandy dandies.
Oh, is that a thing?
No, absolutely not. It never should be. I apologize.
0-9, bad across the board last year. Fired Derek Mason. Their offensive line depleted by COVID. Defense was terrible. I mean, they didn't win any games. So,
right.
They weren't good. The new coach is Clark Lee. They pulled him away from Notre Dame. He really wanted the job. It was an open secret for a long time that Clark Lee was into the Vandy job. And so now they got him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're super optimistic about outside this being a fresh start. Ken Seals was decent. He looked okay at quarterback, their freshman quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Ken Seals Chevrolet. Did we give him a car dealership?
I feel like we gave him a car dealership.
Yeah.
But like, I think you are, if you're a Vandy person, I think your cause here for optimism is the fact that Clark Lee knows the program. He really wanted this job. He's wanted this job for a long time. He's truly one of the smartest, most up-and-coming coaches in college football. And the fact that he wanted this job the way that he did is significant. I am dancing around the fact that I don't think they're going to be very good again. They do have 17 guys back, which is good. It's a starting point. But as they install new stuff, it remains to be seen how much that's even going to matter. They get Mississippi State and Ole Miss from the West. They've got the Academic Bowl against Stanford in week 3, home against Georgia at Florida. It's not an impossible schedule from an SEC standpoint, but from a Vanderbilt standpoint, it's very difficult.
So the UConn game is their Super Bowl.
UConn games are Super Bowl. I think there will be
sandwiched between Georgia and Florida. Yeah.
I think there will be improvement. I think there will be improvement because I do trust in Clark Lee a great deal. I think he's an excellent coach. I think he will find a way to get that defense playing really, really, really well. And this has been a Clark Lee thing. Clark Lee doesn't always have superstars on defense, but he does know how to get the most out of his guys. And so I think that aspect of it will certainly play well at Vanderbilt. In terms of building a winning like the SEC East is getting better across the board. Florida and Georgia are very nearly there. Who knows with Tennessee, but Kentucky's trying to revamp things. Mizzou, we still have to talk about Mizzou. We didn't talk about Mizzou yet.
No, we didn't talk about Mizzou. We'll get there. I almost take a little bit of issue saying the SEC East is getting better. Like, Kentucky, South Carolina, and Tennessee are, at the moment, in a bit of mud, right? So if that's the class that Vandy is looking to ascend to in terms of being competitive with the middle of the SEC East. Now, I think Mizzou is more interesting, but
yeah,
I think it's a good time to be a new coach at Vandy. And by the way, you talk about the talent and building things. Who did he hire to run player personnel? A college football podcaster.
Yeah.
Barton Simmons.
Barton Simmons, that's right.
Who he goes way back with at Vandy. So if you are bullish on Vandy, that's terrific, but you're bullish on 2024. Like, there's not really a conversation to be had right now about Commodore football.
They're going to have 2 wins this year. They're going to get 2 wins.
Yeah.
That's the kind of season we're looking at. But if Clark Lee can change, everyone says they want to change the culture, but if he can put his style of culture in there, great. Yeah. He likes Vandy a lot. He wanted the job. And as I said time and again about Brian Kelly, when he took the Notre Dame job, I think there's a lot of value in that. So we'll see. I don't know.
What does it take to win at Vandy? Be associated with a school that Ty Hildenbrandt roots for. James Franklin and Clark Lee. Here we are. I don't know. I, by the way, apologies to Mizzou fans when you said who's left. And I said, I guess just Vandy, who probably got very angry. I want to talk Mizzou.
Well, let's talk Mizzou.
About Mizzou. Yeah.
Mizzou went 5-5 last year. It was year one of the Eli Drinkwitz era. They beat LSU in their third game, which at the time we didn't really know what we had with LSU. LSU didn't have a great year.
Smoked LSU and got smoked at the same time. Yeah,
exactly. And it wasn't a great team. It was a solid year, but he made the most of it because the defense was really inefficient. They had a star in Nick Bolton.
Mm-hmm, your guy.
My guy. But it was like he can only do so much. The games that they lost, they really lost. They really lost. They got killed.
They did it right.
But it almost does not matter to me because he found his quarterback. He found his quarterback.
Sure. Bazelak.
How many big time coaching hires have been ruined at their new coaching spot because they have not found a quarterback?
It's true. You're totally right.
Connor Bazelak is his quarterback. He found his quarterback. He completed 67% of his passes. He needs to clean up the picks. He needs to get better, but that's pretty good. And if you've got your quarterback who you feel good about, provided he can stay healthy, it makes everything easier. And so at least in that sense, it was a really good year one for Eli Drinkwitz. And 5-5 is a good campaign. It's a good campaign given circumstances for a new coach. As we move forward now into year two, the appeal, I think, is obvious. The appeal is Connor Bazelak, full off season now to develop under Eli Drinkwitz. It's a really good group of wide receivers. It's a much more experienced offensive line in front. They are trying to fix the defense. They brought over Steve Wilks, who's been in the NFL forever. He's an NFL guy. He should have a good defensive line that he can build around. It hurts to lose Nick Bolton, my boy.
Of course.
Hurts to lose him. But at least as a starting point, you could do worse than having a really good defensive line, which is, I think, what Steve Wilks is going to inherit here. So there's reason for optimism. And Eli Drinkwitz is super high energy. He will have that team playing hard.
I'm relatively excited about Mizzou. I still think there's a talent discrepancy in the East that they're going to need to continue to overcome. Drinkwitz has been recruiting impressively, all things considered.
Yeah.
And it's nice that Bazelak is there. You mentioned him and needing to sort of calm down a little bit with the picks and protecting the ball. But yeah, I think there's a high enough floor for Mizzou that their games are going to be interesting and they may pick somebody off. But yeah, the defense is going to need to make strides in the back end. And I just think players are going to need to start popping around Bazelak.
Yeah.
There has to be somebody that are like, okay, here's the clear go to here. That to me is the big, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but
yeah, well, they draw.
I think that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. They draw A&M and Arkansas from the West. They've got a road game against Boston College, which we called out when we did the ACC preview, which is, just, you know, there are some matchups like Michigan State, Miami, Tennessee, Pitt. I'd classify Mizzou, Boston College in there. Matchups that you don't usually see.
Okay.
That one takes place the last week of September, and it should be an interesting barometer for where both programs are at, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Central Michigan in week one, which could actually be a half-decent test. Maybe not from a defensive standpoint, but they can play offense. Kentucky in week two, they go to Georgia. They're home against Florida. So it's about a middle of the road schedule. One of the tougher schedules in the SEC East, if I'm being fair. Yeah. Over under is 7.
7 games. I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, about 8 clearly winnable games. So I winnable, not sure things, but yeah, I could see 8-4. As being a realistic outcome to this team. Okay.
Most important thing is they found their quarterback. They found their quarterback in Connor Bazelak. Everybody's very excited about him. He needs to improve. He needs to get better. Everybody does. But finding your quarterback in year one of a new regime that you can build around moving forward, that is just so instrumental. And I think Eli Drinkwitz is going to do a good job. I feel like he's going to do a good job. I'm really excited, like you are, to see what happens here in year two. I don't know if I would go over 7. 7 feels about right to me, but 7-5, a full 12 game schedule in the SEC. That's a big deal. Year two, that's a really big deal. They're loading up. So yeah. We'll see.
They got pushed around up front a little bit too much last year. That was clear against some of the better teams they played, that like the talent discrepancy was so apparent, and got beat deep a little bit too much. But yeah, with the new coordinator, maybe things that become a little bit more confusing for offenses. I could see it if the relative strength of their defense is up front. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm willing to buy them as a 500-ish team that's well coached to 7 or 8 wins.
We agree. Okay.
We agree.
Talk to me about the Sun Belt, Dan.
Who's winning? Georgia? Georgia's winning. Coming out of the East? Okay.
Talk to me about the Sun Belt East.
Okay, Sun Belt East is low-key one of the more fascinating divisions in college football. Yes. Oh, absolutely. So we have App State, both Georgia Southern and Georgia State, who are appealing in their own ways, and Coastal Carolina and Troy. Like, these are like the competence level of this division might be the highest in college football, just in terms of percentages of teams who appear to be competent and challenging. So I don't know where you want to start. If you want to start with Coastal, who was obviously the class of this conference last year. And this is what we're seeing sort of across the board in among G5 schools, is a lot of super seniors taking advantage of the opportunity to come back for a sixth year. Coastal basically, I mean, they're replacing running back, but otherwise...
Everybody's back, right?
Everybody's back, yeah. Including most notably Jamie Chadwell and Grayson McCall. Grayson McCall obviously could not have left considering he's a young quarterback, but... The band is back together. Everybody's coming back, essentially. So there's a lot to love about Coastal. The schedule is such. I mean, they have Kansas. They're at Buffalo, so they have that weird Leipold 1-2. And they are at App State, but it's after a bye. So the schedule's not terrible. If the defense can get a little bit more stout up front and just sort of hold their own, watch out once again.
Yeah.
There's every reason in the world to believe in Coastal Carolina doing what they did in 2020 and 2021. So that's good. I was trying to come up with like a fear the teal, feel the teal. I don't know where I'm at with that, but I'm very high on the Shants. So there we are. You want to go App State, Troy, or one of the Georgia schools? What are your thoughts on Coastal? Sorry.
Well, yeah, let me just throw this in about Coastal. I will reiterate what I said countless times towards the latter half of last year. Coastal is fun as hell to watch.
Yeah.
They are fun as hell to watch. The offense truly is all of the offenses combined into one. They do everything. There's not.
What was the name of the Seinfeld restaurant or chef who was like, we've got Chinese food, we've got pizza. Was it Babu?
I forget.
Something like that.
I forget.
Yeah.
And I know
yeah.
Seinfeld, but I forget.
Yeah.
But it's all of the offense. It is everything that you enjoy. It is like going to a smorgasbord of offense.
Yep,
so
it's Babu.
It's so much fun. If you haven't watched Coastal yet, even if you don't care about Coastal, watch a game. Watch the App State game. That should actually be fun as hell in late October. But this is an offense that brings a lot back. As you said, 9 starters back. Grayson McCall's back. They're really fun to watch on offense. You won't know what you're going to see next.
Yeah, it's sort of what if an option team also had a sophisticated enough quarterback to throw the ball all over the field.
All right, let's talk App State. Tell me about App State.
App State's in a really good position. I mean, they had an incredible pass defense last year, and you know they had experience at quarterback, and skill positions were great, and they just kind of ran into a juggernaut. It was sort of an off year for them, but they're another one of those, a really high floor within the Sun Belt West situation. So the pass defense is in a great spot. As I mentioned, that the concern that I have, because you look at their year last year, they allowed, I think, more than 28 points once all year long. They finished in the top 20 in points per drive allowed and scored. They're just in a really solid place under Sean Clark, who took over. And it's a tough situation, right? With 3 head coaches in 3 years after Eli Drinkwitz left after a year. The concern is Chase Bryce appears to be the starter at quarterback. I'm wrong. But the turnovers last year... And, you know, maybe that he's just a really good G5 quarterback and doesn't have it as a Power 5 guy. But 15 picks, 6, I think, lost fumbles. Like, it's just, it's rough. So, you know, full offseason, comfort, whatever. Hope everything works out for App State and Chase Bryce. The schedule's tough because wow. Chase Bryce will, even though he's no longer an ACC quarterback, be throwing into the Miami defense on the road. They're at Louisiana and Coastal at home in consecutive weeks. And the good news, I suppose, for App State is the Deeper the Hate game. Deeper the Hate.
Hate.
Against Georgia. I don't know what that word was. Hate against Georgia Southern is in Boone. It's at home. So there's that. So App State should be in another nice spot, provided the turnovers aren't out of hand on offense, to threaten 9-10 wins.
Who's next up then? Is it Georgia State? Is it Troy? Like, where do you stand on the remaining three teams?
The interest, in terms of interesting teams to me, is probably Georgia Southern, just because they run that option. They lost their quarterback to receiver for Louisville now, Shai Wirtz. So they're starting over quarterback, but the system's really tricky to play against. It's Chad Lunsford, who's been at Southern forever. They put forward a good defense in 2020. They had a great shot against Louisiana on the road and at Army. They had a dominating bowl win. Look, they as expected for an option team, they ran the ball well. They hit some bigger passes, but not a consistent team through the air. But, you know, the turnover margin was fantastic. You play with the ability to run the ball consistently and stop the ball consistently, you're going to win a bunch of games. They were tied with Coastal after three quarters. So it's an intriguing team that has a new quarterback and is a very difficult system to plan for and play against. Justin Tomlin is the presumed new quarterback. And obviously in this kind of system, quarterback seems like everything. They're at Arkansas and have Louisiana in consecutive weeks, which will be tricky. And they host BYU and play at App State in consecutive weeks. So it's tricky, but I could see 8-9 wins here.
Wow.
I like Georgia Southern.
See, this is really interesting to me, because I did the other side of the Sun Belt, and there's one team worth talking about. That's Louisiana.
Correct.
The others are pretty bad. So the fact that, you know,
I mean, Georgia Southern went 8-5 last year.
They went 8-5 last year, and it's clear that this side of the Sun Belt is much, much stronger.
Right.
But it's really, really a stark contrast when you look at these teams on paper to see what they're working with compared to somebody like, you know, Texas State, South Alabama, ULM. ULM's terrible. You know, we'll talk about the Terry Bowden era, but there, I think there's three programs with new coaches on the western side of the Sun Belt. So Georgia State, you want to talk about Georgia State?
Sure. Talk about Sean Elliott's dudes. I mean, the appeal here for me, just headline, marquee, double Cornelius situation, which means they have a quarterback named Cornelius and a receiver named Cornelius, though the quarterback is a fourth, so they call him Quad. So it's Quad Brown.
Quad Brown.
It was a relatively average offense at certain stretches last year. Had some big playability. The defense was okay. Had their struggles sometimes rushing the passer and in the secondary. But they, you know, as a number of these G5 teams do, they return a ton. The super seniors are here and ready to play. They're pretty good at the skill positions. And I guess if Quad Brown protects the ball better, I mean, this is going to be the story for a lot of these teams, that they stand a chance if they don't shoot themselves in the foot. It just, man, I don't know if you pulled up their schedule, but they have, just in terms of a 3-week stretch, sometimes we talk about these like tough back-to-backs, a 3-week stretch with all road games and one of them being short rest against maybe the best team they play in that stretch. So Georgia State, I mean, this is aside from Army and at North Carolina opening up the season, which presents a long list of challenges for that defense. And this is aside from at Auburn and App State in consecutive weeks. Georgia Southern on the road, Louisiana on the road, short rest. So a Saturday to Thursday situation, and then at Coastal.
That's tough.
That's a lot.
That's a lot to ask. Wow.
So option or pseudo option teams sandwiching maybe the best team in the conference in the Raging Cajuns.
Close it out then. Let's talk about the Troy Trojans, Dan.
So Chip Lindsey, late addition last year, or whenever he joined up with, it was a couple years ago now, after taking the Kansas OC job. They had an okay 2020. They didn't really beat anybody good, but they fought well against Coastal in the final week, came up just short against Georgia State, and they played Middle Tennessee twice, because we have quirks in 2020. They split those two games. Middle Tennessee wasn't all that good. There's a ton on offense that's back for the Trojans. They hit the transfer portal and got a couple dudes from like NC State and Florida State. So some higher profile Power 5 level guys. they need to run the ball better. They need to clean up the turnover situation. They are in a good place, though, just because they are solid to be a bowl team. Once again, Troy obviously hit some really nice highs under the previous regime, but I'm pretty high on Troy right now because it's the competence floor. They host Liberty. They're at South Carolina, and they do get a bye before they have to travel to Coastal. So all things considered, Troy's in a pretty good place situationally. I like them. So maybe they're a 7-5 team, something like that, but I think they're going to be pretty competitive.
All righty. Who's your pick then on the Eastern side? Is it App State or is it Coastal?
I'm going to go Coastal here. The schedule is nice.
So, schedule is 128th in terms of difficulty. Yeah. That's in stark comparison to App State, which is 81st.
Yeah, I'm bringing up, those are the notes I made about Coastal schedule. But if you actually, like, their road tilts are at Buffalo, at Arkansas State, all due respect to the Red Wolves, but that's after ULM, at App State, which will be difficult, but there's a bye beforehand, at Georgia Southern, and that's sandwiched between Troy and Georgia State, so that's tricky, but I'm just very confident right now in the shots. That's all. Yeah.
All righty. Well, write in solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what we missed. We will be doing the SEC West preview this coming Wednesday. So you're going to want to check that out. Don't forget
early access on verballers.com.
Yep. I was going to say, don't forget to go on out to verballers.com. We release these shows a full 24 hours early in case you're interested. Maybe not a big deal now, but as we get into the season, we'll be doing our preview shows early. We'll be doing all of our shows a little bit earlier for people who are Patreon subscribers. So verballers.com is where you can find that information.
Yep.
Solidverbal.com, of course, is where you can find all the web content that we've been so adamant about trying to put out there into the world, which we're excited about.
Is Mizzou your crush team in the East?
Mizzou's absolutely my crush team.
I like it. Have you been to Columbia?
No.
It's a fun time.
No.
I liked Columbia. The in-game atmosphere, I went when they were still a Big 12 team, but the downtown Columbia area, I think it's an underrated SEC pizza town. A couple decent pizza options in the neighborhood or in the area. I liked Como. I'm in. I'm good with that crush.
Alrighty. Well, Daniel, let's go hydrate the vocal cords here because we're going to do this again shortly and do SEC West. In the meantime, though, this has been fun. It's good to talk all things SEC with you. Good to talk all things Sun Belt East with you as well. As I said, we'll be back in like 2 days to talk more SEC. In the meantime, for that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting. We'll talk to you all soon. Stay solid.
Peace.
Dreaming of starting your own podcast? Make it a reality with the Movo Pod Kit, the podcast bundle designed for aspiring podcasters ready to share their voice with the world. The Pod Kit is equipped with everything you'll need to sound like a pro while being backed by a 1-year warranty with a US-based support team. Start your podcasting journey today with the Movo Pod Kit and let the world hear your story. Movo, creators wanted.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.